Welcome to Tax Breaks, a podcast by the Federation of Tax Administrators, where we delve into current subjects and their relevance to the realm of tax administration. Each episode of our podcast features conversations with esteemed professionals from government, academia, and the private sector. Our guests generously share their wealth of knowledge and unique perspectives, providing invaluable insights and expertise to our listeners. I'm Ryan Minnick, FTA's Chief Operating Officer, and for the purposes of today's episode, a proud millennial who identifies often as Gen X. And today I'm sitting down with Kitty Kallmeyer, a good friend and an executive coach and consultant who is an expert in generations and is going to help us understand the five generations in the workplace, how we all show up in the workplace as it relates to our generation. And we'll even leave you with a few tips from Kitty on how you can better relate to those colleagues that you have from different generations and utilize that to achieve, you know, better results and more synergy and better collaboration within your organization. So without further ado, here's our conversation with Kitty Kallmeyer, executive coach and consultant. I want to first introduce our guest, a good friend of mine and of FTA, Kitty Kallmeyer, an executive coach and consultant. Welcome, Kitty. So excited to have you on the podcast finally.
Thank you. It's always an honor.
So when you introduce yourself and you speak at our conferences and you mention you're an executive coach and consultant, I've learned what that means over time, but perhaps our listeners might need a little refresher. And we always ask our guests to give a little bit of their journey, how they ended up working in their space. And then, you know, they can tie back to our discussion later on. So how does one become an executive coach and consultant?
Well, I have a probably unique background. What I do today is I help leaders and teams get better. And I do that through one-on-one interactions as well as working with groups and teams. But I started out as a retail chick. So I grew up in the retail business and had really the honor and privilege of working for some amazing global organizations, including the Walt Disney Company, Apple, Estee Lauder. I spent some time in department stores, Marshall Fields, which became Macy's while I was there. So a varied background. And then Crazy Kitty decided to start her own business about 10 years ago. And taking everything I've learned and all that was part of my journey, and now I help leaders and teams get better.
Wow. And those are incredibly complex and large organizations. So I can imagine that our topic today, which is going to be generations and how they show up in the workplace and how we can all, as different generations, get to know each other a little better and support each other, that had to have, you know, impacted a lot of this expertise that you've built over this time. And so you talk a lot about generations. So what was your interest in generations and how did you kind of begin that journey to become, you know, someone who I consider one of the, you know, foremost experts in generations in the workplace today?
Yeah, so you're right. I'm super interested, very passionate about the different generations in the workforce. And I started really becoming interested and started speaking about the different generations in the workforce several decades ago when it was the first time that there were four generations in the workforce. And it was causing conflict. And so working through how generations become the way they are, understanding what values they hold dear and how does that affect how they show up at work? And then what do we do to bridge the gap? And now we have five generations in the workforce.
I was going to say, I think we keep, you know, I think a lot of the trends in the data are showing that people are, you know, due to job satisfaction or maybe deferred retirement or maybe traits of the generations, as we get into talking about them, we have people staying in the workforce a little bit longer. We have new generations entering. I feel like I'm always frozen in time from when I entered the workforce as a millennial, and yet I encounter young people in the workforce today and they're different, which is so strange. I never thought I'd encounter a younger generation than me that presents differently than I do and have to kind of bridge through those understandings. Mm-hmm. So I guess for the benefit of our listeners, we should talk about which generations are currently in the workforce. And I guess we can talk a little bit about each one. So what generations do we see in the workforce today?
Yeah, so today we see five, starting with the oldest, and it's a very small percentage, but the silent generation continues to hang on as about 1% of the workforce. Those are people that are 80 years old or more. The baby boomers, which is less than 19% and shrinking a little bit each day, they're 61 to 79. Gen X, which is our smallest generation, but it makes up 35% of the workforce today. They're 45 and the oldest are turning 60. And then the dreaded millennial, which is the oldest, or the youngest are 29, the oldest are already 44, if you can believe that. And then our youngest, which is Gen Z, they're 13 to 28. So they're just starting in the workforce, but anticipated to be a third of the workforce by 2029.
Wow. That's in I know in government land, that's around the corner. In the private sector, it's a little, they see time frames a little differently. Do those percentages tend to track or shift a little bit when you talk about public sector versus private sector, or are they fairly consistent regardless of where you look in the workplace?
They're pretty consistent, although given the expertise in the tax industry, we see a little bit more silent generation and baby boomer hanging on, either because they want to. Some are enticed back by the organization because of their expertise or their functioning in consultancy roles.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting. I know the first time you spoke on this at one of our conferences, I was really intrigued. I had never really identified out the silent generation growing up. It wasn't a term that I had heard super often. So to kind of hear about traits that formed their worldview, I found as a millennial was super helpful. I think a lot of times we talk about millennials, Gen X, Gen Z, certainly in the news all the time. But just for my own curiosity, and if anybody else is as clueless as I once was about the silent generation, what formed kind of their backbone akin to the other generations?
Yeah, so the silent generation was born in a time when the family unit was very traditional. Mother, father, children. The father was the authority figure. These are the people that signed up to fight in World War II. Very self-sacrificing, a very respectful, very loyal generation. Just kind of put their head down and did what they were told to do.
Which I suppose, you know, being a student of history kind of tracks with the different development of different industries over that time period, post-World War II into the modern era.
Definitely.
So I know, and we don't have to run through every single generation, but I think maybe in order to start to move our conversations towards generations in the workplace, I think motivations matter quite a bit. And we'll probably touch on this a couple different ways, but, you know, those defining traits of each generation, I mean, in the workplace specifically, they manifest in different ways, right? So work and money and goals. So what are some insights across these five generations that might help us later in our conversation talk about how they work together?
Yeah, so the silent generation is a rule follower. They are not going to buck the system. They will do as told. And they value relationships and loyalty. The handshake is their word. The baby boomers were premised the idea of the American dream, and they were willing to work hard for it. They were incredibly ambitious, came out and learned to work together to achieve. We have the baby boomers to thank for busting the 40-hour work week. So they're certainly defined by status, by accomplishment, by title, corner office, fat salary, all of that. And Gen X, although they wanted something different, there's very few, and they were not able to sort of create a movement against the baby boomers, even though Gen X wants more balance. Gen X is also a very skeptical generation. They saw a lot of different things. They saw a president resign in shame, apartheid fall, the AIDS crisis, and so much more. Just toppling of institutions, churches, government, different things. They also grew up watching kids' faces on milk, missing kids' faces on milk cartons, having to x-ray trick-or-treat candy because people were putting razor blades in candy bars and apples. So and they were the latchkey kids who grew up with either two working parents or were the product of divorce. So they spent a lot of time on their own, became very independent, very skeptical. And then the millennials came along, largely raised by baby boomers, and they were raised in a time where there was a lot of attention on children from their parents, a lot of scheduling of activities, high interest in achievement. And so this is a very scheduled, orchestrated generation who was told what to do, when to do it. And they also saw the world of technology grow and take over. They got themselves very quickly connected. They're all about relationships. And lastly, Gen Z, which we're just learning so much because the oldest is 28, the youngest is 13. And so they're just starting in the workforce and they've never known security or safety. And they've only known a world at war, a world of terrorism, of gun violence. They don't feel safe anywhere. I don't know that they can articulate that to you, but it's true. And these are also digital natives. They've never known anything different. So while technology grew for millennials, Gen Z grew up with it and were connected in a different way all along. And it's important to say that not only are we defined by the different events and things that we see, education has changed, and that's an event. How we view authority, the family structure has changed, and how we view authority like a teacher has changed. It's less about putting out a compliant workforce that will move the widgets through the system, and more about developing a population that is innovative, creative, and able to pivot as the world pivots, which it does every day.
Interesting. Well, and I can attest as a millennial raised by two baby boomers, with a couple of older half Gen X siblings and some nieces and nephews that span from Gen Z to now Gen Alpha, very young. It's interesting for me to see, as you were laying this out, all of the kind of transitions between generations. It's almost like, you know, for better or for worse, there's a subset of traits that get passed on from the generation that raises. And because it appears that, you know, you leapfrog, you know, the boomers raise the millennials. Now you have the Gen Xers raising the Gen Z, and millennials now are, you know, raising Gen Alpha and the early Gen Alphas that will mature at some point. How do you think, just in your expertise, it looks like those traits, as they get passed along, every generation adds a little bit. And it seems like that diversity can sometimes create friction in the workplace. I know we talk about generations showing up in the workplace, and you've shared a lot with our members, the government agencies that have really diverse workforces. How does that friction start to present itself among these generations as they're in the workplace?
Yeah, I think how it creates friction is just different style preferences, and different style preferences just really comes from how we're shaped. Our values are shaped by what we observe and what we see. And we all observed and saw and experienced different things that shaped us to be different. Some find it very difficult and will say, well, that generation just needs to toughen up, or this generation needs to ease up, but you can't change a generation. They are what they are. They observed what they observed. They became what they became. And so I think there is a lack of understanding and a lack of a desire to meet people where they are and figure out a relationship from there. Because it's worth noting that a generation is a generalization. And people are just people. We form relationships with people, and understanding people, everyone's new, unique.
I like that point that you make, and it makes me think of a couple of things that you've shared in your presentations over time, whether it be about generations or leadership or development of teams. And, you know, your generation is just a piece of the trait, right? I jokingly started by saying I was a millennial, but identify as Gen X. I know that we've talked in the past about some research that talks about millennials' tendencies to, depending on how you grew up in regionality and how quickly the internet reached you. Some millennials trend very Gen X in style, and some millennials trend very Gen Z in style. So we're almost a generation without a generation. We're trying, even among my own cohort, we have very different traits. But a lot of the skills that I know as someone who, you know, is part of a team and works on team growth and team development with you, by the way, thank you for all the work you do with our team. I noticed that the things that I work on from a skill standpoint have less to do with my generation and more to do with my kind of individual style that might necessarily be informed by my generation, but still, yeah. you know, would be separate. So I think, you know, how can we maybe help our listeners understand that, yeah, your generation is your generation, but how you work together is probably, I don't know, I'm not the expert. Is it more informed? Is it equally informed by those lived generational experiences?
You know, I think like anything, the better understanding we have of an individual and their preferences, the better relationship we can have. It's up to us to adjust. That's at the heart of emotional intelligence, isn't it? To meet people where they are. We're the ones who need to make adjustments if we want to have an effective relationship. And I think that there are some things we can do to just appreciate different people. The silent generation is a rule-following generation. There's so much to be learned, and experience never gets old. We can leverage people like that. Baby boomers enjoy meetings. They're the biggest push for back to the office. I understand why. This is what has made them successful. They're comfortable in those. However, we have other generations like Gen Z who do not want to be back in the office. So understanding that a preference isn't necessarily a demand, and it's not that people are trying to get their way, it's just that they're different. So how can we, rather than tolerate it, and not just tolerate, not just accept, but actually appreciate that there could be a different way that could have a different outcome. And there are some generations that work better together than others. Baby boomers and millennials tend to have a rub more. The silent generation works super well with millennials in terms of mentoring. And we have a lot to learn still about Gen Z, but they want mentoring. They want leadership, as opposed to popular belief is they don't want to work at all. That's not true. They do want to work. They want to work for people who are interested in them and helping them and helping them formulate a career path and helping them learn. And they may stay with you.
That's an interesting point. I guess a lot of the comments and remarks about, you know, millennials, you know, perhaps Gen Z at some point, I know that there's not a lot of data yet on their kind of migratory patterns across sectors and jobs, yeah. but, you know, an often critique I hear, and, you know, as a millennial who this year will all have been at FTA for 10 years. So I've obviously found a place I really enjoy and love the work, but I always hear the critique of, you know, millennials don't stay very long. They move around quite a bit. And as I was reflecting on some of the traits of the generations you were sharing when we first started talking, I wondered kind of your thoughts on how some of those traits, maybe is it more acceptable for millennials based on the environment they grew up in, that they feel more comfortable transitioning across jobs and roles? Is it they're seeking kind of that understanding and that collaboration? And so they tend to migrate a bit, but there's, I don't know if there's data that suggests, like me, millennials that find that niche stay longer. I wonder if is there a myth to be busted here, or is it a generation that truly seeks that challenge and flexibility every few years on average, and the workforce needs, you know, workplaces need to adjust to that?
Yeah, it's an intriguing topic, isn't it? So most of the younger millennials and Gen Z think 2 to 3 years is plenty of time in an organization. They are looking for flexibility, and they're looking for financial reward. And this whole pay your dues, pay your time, and then you'll get it, that does not resonate with them, because there's ample opportunity out there and they'll go for it. Now, if you have a plan for them, like any other employee engagement plan, if you are helping them to feel valued by their boss, by the organization, they're feeling part of a winning team, they're feeling there's a career path forward for them, and they're being rewarded for it financially and with title, they'll stay. You're a perfect example of that. And so the idea that I know of millennials who, I can think of a specific person in my network who has been promoted 3 times within their organization. It's a Fortune 100 company, by the way. And he has been promoted 3 times, financially rewarded, and he has the exact same job and still does not have direct reports. So it's a creative way to address the need, and they have retained him as a result of it.
Interesting. And that's a really good strategic insight, I think, for our members. I know government agencies in particular, as you mentioned, we have a high reliance in the government sector on subject matter knowledge. Yeah. You know, transition planning is a little bit harder. Budgets work differently. Yes. Backfilling positions are very different. Yep. And so as agencies take on, you know, newer generations of workforce and are trying to adapt the agency model to be engaging and create that retention. And in government, I mean, I think, you know, the private sector has similar costs and structures, but in government, I feel like, you know, when I, 10 years ago, when I first started at FTA, the rough average tenure of a state revenue agency employee was probably, you know, 10 to 15 years at the time. It had slipped from the career long, but it was still 10 to 15 years. And in that turnover meant that you were recruiting once every 10 to 15 years, you had training expense, you know, you still have, no matter what, you know, that traditional year of time where somebody's figuring out their role and achieving peak effectiveness. And now, as retirements have accelerated, as workforces have continued to shift, that average tenure, you know, has dropped. And, you know, I don't have any data to cite for it, but it, you know, anecdotally working with all these agencies, it feels like the tenure's probably halved from what I saw 10 years ago, which means that best case scenario, if it's halved, you have double the hiring and training expense with double the knowledge loss, if you assume a certain percentage of subject matter knowledge loss every time a role turns over. And it becomes a really big challenge. So I appreciate kind of the insight into the millennial generation in particular. It seems like there's a lot more millennials entering government service. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that. It sounds like, you know, I speaking for myself, I enjoy the purpose of working for a nonprofit like FTA and right. and helping make things better in government. And yeah. I think that's attracting my peer group as I've kind of reached millennial middle age, as scary as that is to admit on a podcast. But how does that play in? I guess that's my observation based on what you're saying, but I don't know, am I in the right direction understanding this, or is there something?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, here's the thing. The world has evolved, and the silent generation, it was great when we were moving widgets through the system. We're in the Industrial Revolution, but we're leading in the digital era now. And to do what we've always done and think we're going to get some different result is not going to work. And so as the world evolves, as we educate our children differently, what are we doing differently as we are employing a younger workforce? Because to say this is just the way it is and this is the way it has to be means we'll have turnover. But you mentioned something really important, Ryan, which is the purpose. The youngest among us, meaning millennials and Gen Z, I mean, millennials are all about purpose at work. They hold their values very closely, and they want their work to have meaning and purpose. Same with Gen Z. And Gen Z expects that their organization, their boss, their coworkers will do the right thing. So the idea of transparency with the organization and how we make decisions and how we tie purpose beyond profit and just KPIs and results matters. And to baby boomers, it didn't matter. I mean, just, I was literally told, I'm a baby boomer. When I joined the workforce, I was literally told, leave your emotions at the door, kitty. Nobody cares how you feel. Just do your work. Well, we know so much more. We know our emotions drive our behavior. We're in a mental health crisis. As a nation, for sure, a world probably, and it would be ridiculous to not use all the information we have in building effective relationships with people, both personally and professionally.
It's so interesting because as I think about exactly what you're describing it, you know, maybe I'm a little Pollyanna about state tax revenue. I might be a little biased in my role. But yet again, it feels like here's a trend coming along, like so many others, where perhaps state revenue agencies are better positioned than they realize. And some of this may just be a challenge of articulation. I think one of the things that I appreciate so much about state and local tax and revenue, not to get too tax geeky here on a podcast about generations, but the whole purpose of tax administration is fairly and equally applying the tax code as it exists to everyone and making sure that everybody pays their fair share, not a penny more, not a penny less, and that critical government services are funded. There's incredible purpose there. And that I certainly find very attractive, you know, and being in a national role with FTA where we can help so many different agencies, that's super exciting every day. Problem solving becomes part of that. And I think the agencies that I've seen that have had great success in recruiting, you know, millennials and Gen Z into their workforce are now I'm starting to see a correlation here. They're probably articulating this really well. And and perhaps, you know, once again, maybe revenue agencies are better positioned than they realize to attract this labor pool, because, you know, for these generations, where does purpose fall in relation to all the other things we've talked about, title, compensation, those types of work styles? Is purpose, does it depend on the generation, millennial, Gen Z? Is it, you know, just part of the mix?
It's part of the mix for both, for sure. The difference is millennial and Gen Z will leave you if these things aren't present, whereas it may be a preference for baby boomers or Gen X that their work have meaning, that they feel they have a purpose, but they may not put their stake in the ground over it. And that could just be personality difference. But we see with millennials and Gen Z, they'll leave if they don't find it. And you're right, our ability to articulate it is critical. And that is a leader's job to share the binocular view and bring that back, because the truth is most of us are working in a microscope. And so how does what I'm doing here relate to that broader view? And then, you know, what are the milestones? So I feel like I'm helping to achieve that broader vision that the organization has so that my work is meaningful. I feel like I achieved something. I feel like I did a good job today and it was worth something. And it can be fun. It doesn't need to be so heavy.
You know, that's interesting. We've talked so far about kind of origins of the generation, motivations in the workplace, you know, purpose, the different generations, how they respond to different, you know, needs that they have and values. Communication plays a huge role in this. Mm-hmm. And you talk a lot about communication. I think, you know, as you were sharing, sometimes generational understanding is built on understanding your own generation, kind of looking inward and imagining how you relate to others, or maybe even as a millennial who has gone through, you know, as a middle-aged millennial, gone through being the young millennial in the workforce, right, with certainly less self-awareness and a lot of millennial traits, to now in my grand middle-aged millennialism, where I feel like I have far more self-awareness of my millennial traits and far more education on, you know, the different generations and just the different, you know, journeys that the people around me, both my immediate colleagues as well as national colleagues, you know, from all these different agencies, I now see the path. I mean, I commented to someone the other day, I can imagine how irritating I was when I was first in the workforce, because I was very millennial. I was very much, let's get a plan together, let's do it, let's make it happen. Yeah. It wasn't a pushy, widgety, you know, methodology. It was just, I saw a problem and I wanted to fix a problem. And as time has gone on, I found that communication plays a big part, because you have to understand the context around a problem. And I'm sure some of that is just a general lesson of maturing in the workplace versus something unique to a generation. But how can some of the organizations, you know, we're talking about state revenue agencies because, you know, it's FTA, but how can organizations kind of optimize their communication for different generations in order to make sure they're bringing people along for exactly what you're describing, that journey to get the work done?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to, one, be aware of your own preferences, but also sort of honor, I would say, be aware of and then honor other people's preferences. But there's another layer of it, too, of understanding kind of why they came to be. So when you look at silent generation or even baby boomers, they prefer in person, they prefer face to face. Whereas somebody Gen Z would prefer to text or message and never have a face to face, many of them. And there's a difference. When I was growing up, I would wait for the bus for school. We would play tag, talk, play Foursquare. And now what do you see when you drive by a bus stop? Everybody's texting, probably the person standing next to them. So there are preferences that we can honor if we understand them. But it's about, how do you prefer to be communicated with? And let's stay current. If I'm a baby boomer and technology is not my first preference, and I'm a baby boomer, so I can pick on the baby boomers, we weren't all raised with technology. I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts from a Big Ten school and never took a computer class, and we still paid people to type our papers. I've had to work harder to keep up. I also try to honor other people's preferences. I see it in my children. My son texted the family group chat to let us know he was getting engaged. That was an in-person appearance to my parents when I got engaged. So it's just a different preference. You said something else that is important, which is, you think back about how irritating maybe you or others might have been when they entered the workforce. Well, as we get older, most of us become somewhat more self-aware. Not all of us, but most of us do. And with awareness comes choice. So once we're aware of another generation's preferences or another person's preferences, and we're aware of ours, then we decide, how do we both adjust, or how do I adjust to honor that? It's not that people are trying to be demanding. It's they just lived what they lived. And also, I mentioned earlier that education has changed. We're raising millennials and Gen Z were really educated differently and asked their opinion all the time by teachers, by parents. I ask my kids all the time, where do you want to go on spring break? Are you happy? Nobody ever asked me if I was happy. If I wasn't bleeding and my fever wasn't over 105, I was fine. Nobody asked me where I wanted to go on spring break. It just was different. Not one isn't right and the other isn't wrong, but we wonder why the youngest among us joins an organization and thinks the CEO wants their opinion on day two. It's not that they're being demanding. They actually have something to say. And guess what? What if they're right? What if how we're looking at it isn't quite right? What if this other younger, different, unfiltered point of view has something to offer? And sometimes those things that make us uncomfortable are the very things we should consider. That's the diversity that all these different generations bring, and not just different generations, but diversity in general. This is just one component, but that's what makes us better and stronger. It makes us more creative, more innovative. So what if we stopped and listened? What if we stopped and considered? And what if we stopped getting frustrated and stopped asking everyone to be like us and started thinking, I wonder how I could adjust.
That's exciting. Well, and it's so interesting, because I imagine kind of what you laid out here, you know, every organization somewhere on a spectrum for this, right? There's probably, and I'm sure the more large and complex the organization, like the ones that you mentioned, you had come up through before stepping into your role as an executive coach and consultant, you see microcosms of that. I mean, I certainly, in working with large organizations, see it all the time, where there's one particular unit that's really effective because they've gelled and they've developed well as a team, and they, probably are doing exactly what you're describing. They're listening with slightly more open ears, and they're kind of recognizing differences and trying to turn that into magic to achieve a result. I know that's certainly what, our team does at FTA. We have a diverse range of subject matter experts with a lot of experience and a lot of different perspectives. And some of my favorite magic on the planet is when we all get into a virtual room, because we're based everywhere, but we get into a virtual room together and we, you know, digest a problem or talk about a solution. And, you know, much like generational perspective, even other perspectives become super valuable. But keeping us on topic for generations, what I find really interesting about all of this is that there seems to be a few takeaways for our listeners. Okay. You know, if our listeners are, you know, organizations, maybe you are a leader of an organization or a leader of a team. Maybe you're just a part of a team. Maybe you've newly joined Tax and Revenue and you're listening to a podcast to hear what this is all about, what this world's all about. What are some tips for both leaders and just individual members of the workforce in your environment to kind of go forth, take this knowledge about the generations and achieve kind of better synergy or better, a better work environment for everybody? I know everybody's gonna have different powers at different levels, but what would be some advice that you would give?
Yeah, I think advice, and it goes far beyond the generations, but it does encompass what would be necessary. Find out what the expectations are, and not just of the organization for the employee, but what preferences does the leader have? What are the expectations of a leader? And then what are the expectations the employee has of the leader of the organization, so that things are clear? You know, I'll often hear, you know, that a millennial just doesn't take initiative. So have you told them that's an expectation? Is part of your expectation to take initiative, which means don't come to me with a problem, come to me with a problem and three solutions? Have you said that? Be really clear, not insulting, but really clear. And when there's conflict or tension, I'm a big fan of outing it and talking about it. And try to approach it without judgment and just with curiosity. Ask questions versus making demands. Try to understand another person and what their motivation is, and you might be surprised. We make a lot of assumptions.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, you know, as we've talked about generations today, I think a lot about the different organizations I've been a part of and, you know, just how I relate to all the people I've worked with. And I am, you know, as you know, we've known each other quite some time. I'm a naturally curious person, so I think I've fared pretty well in this storm of generational engagement. I was very lucky growing up having a lot of mentors that were silent generation and baby boomers, and just valued so much that knowledge that they could bring to the table. And so I think that initially kicked off my curiosity. I was taught to be curious by the silent generation, the baby boomers. And I find that exactly what you're describing, curiosity, at least for me, in my own personal lived experience, has rewarded me so much more often than it has cost me anything. And the worst cost to being curious is maybe there's a delay because you're gathering information instead of taking action. But generally speaking, I've never had a negative effect from just asking a curious question.
No, but you're right. Time is a precious commodity and we're moving very quickly. And that is the perfect storm for misunderstanding and conflict. And the strategic pause can take you everywhere you need to go. Pause and be curious. Pause and think about what you want to say next. Pause and ask a question. Pause and reflect on where the other person might be coming from. Or, like you said, just ask.
I love it. So we've got some really great advice. We've got, you know, listening, curiosity, the strategic pause. Mm-hmm. We've built an understanding of the five different generations in the workplace and how we can all, you know, recognize our own generation and listen to maybe listen a little more clearly to the other generations. Hopefully people have walked away with a better understanding of that. And, you know, I think it feels like a perfect place to end our discussion for now. You know, perhaps we'll get some questions from listeners. And as always, they can send us an email, taxbreaks@taxadmin.org, and we'll answer them. Maybe we'll bring Kitty back for a special Q&A with Kitty Kohlmeyer.
Sounds great.
So Kitty, every one of our guests, we like to ask them what they've got going on. I know that you'll be in a couple months speaking at one of our conferences, our annual meeting in Chicago. And, you know, if there's anything that you want to plug or any resources that you want folks to be aware of as it relates to what we were talking about today, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Yeah. You know what? This is something I'm so passionate about. Like I led with, I will end with, I love to help people as individual leaders and also teams get better. And this is just one component of it, but I look forward to seeing the community at conference and continuing the discussion about this and how we can all just continue to work together to get better.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Katie. I really appreciate you sitting down. It took too long for us to do this, and I'm so glad we did.
Thank you for having me. I thought you'd never ask.
All right, everybody. Well, until next time, this has been Tax Breaks, a podcast, the official podcast, the Federation of Tax Administrators. And thank you so much to Katie Kohlmeier, executive coach, consultant, generational expert. And we'll see you in Chicago for your next talk with our team.
See you then.